Welcome, Thaddeus and Gentlethems, siblings and nibblings, to our first episodes of Ghosts of Asura 9. This is the first arc of five in a series titled The Deimos Paradox for Tabletop Roulette, an anthology podcast populated by rotating diverse casts and game masters. So pull up a chair, put down your chips, saddle up for today's game.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, everyone in between or irrespective of that binary, pull up a chair and put down your chips. It's time for Tabletop Roulette. Today's game is...
RPG by Miguel Lopez and Tom Parkinson's Morgan, in which the players explore a mud and lasers styled game of the world of the distant future, year 5016. Players play as Lancers, the best pilots in the known universe of anime style customizable mechs. Anyone can be a Lancer. I'm your Game Master Reed, and you can find me on Twitter at replays or howtoseduceadragon.com. Let's go around and meet our players and their pilots. Starting with Tricky, tell us who you are.
All right, I'm Tricky. You can find me at Twitter at @acleverTrick. I'll be playing Pazo Mocha, a disgraced NHP developer, call sign Cayenne.
Hi, Dusty. You can find me at on Twitter at DustyHill. I'm going to be playing Rigoberto de la Rosa, otherwise known as Despero.
Hi, I'm Evan Saff, the Friendly Neighborhood Jam on the Rollout Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at NamesEquipped, and I will be playing Telesin, call sign The Sin.
Hi, I'm Dorka. You can find me on Twitter at Dorka Sadai. I am playing Carolina DeVore, call sign Flyover.
Hi, I'm Gnome, and you can find me on Twitter at GreyKnight19. I'll be playing Vesper Kane, call sign Tuned.
Awesome. All right, that's your crew, and let's get into it. So as you both are having this touching conversation, you hear footsteps down the hall.
Carolina, is that you?
There's no answer.
Telesin sort of flips the knife up so that she's no longer stabbing her hand. Well, that's a little concerning.
Mm-hmm. Rigoberto has the stealth suit on. He's just going to take a second and disappear so he could kind of go see what's going on.
You hear the footsteps coming closer and closer, and then you see a humanoid figure limp into view. And this, it's right away, you notice that one of the feet on this apparatus is been ripped off, and part of the face has also been scratched up. It's like a chassis, not unlike the one that Cass would sometimes use on your ship to get around, physically anyway, to interact physically with the environment, because sometimes she would be in the ship, but also they'd be in a almost like a mech chassis. Like I was explaining last session, I think that I imagine that these things look a lot like the robots in iRobot, where they're very loosely based on the human form, but relatively expressionless and featureless, kind of almost just like mannequins, if you will, that NHPs will inhabit. And this one looks pretty fucked up, but is limping towards you, and its eyes are lit up with blue light, and it says,
"Hello, Telesin, Rigoberto. How may I be of service?"
Oh, Cass? And
Rigoberto reappears and is like, "How's to know our names?"
"Of course I know your names. I am Castellan."
"What?"
It just continues to walk past you towards the door.
I'm going to, you know, catch it on the shoulder. Cass?
Yes, Taliesin. How may I be of service?
Could you give me a quick diagnostic of where you think you are?
Her eyes kind of like shift for a second, like she's scanning. And it just takes a moment, and then she snaps back, and she says,
I am on Asura 9.
Okay.
She lifts her hands to the air, and she says,
do you think that it will rain?
Probably not in here.
Probably depends on the environmental controls, Cass. Do you know anything about those?
Accessing. All seems to be in order. The temperature is set to 23 degrees Celsius, a constant temperature optimal for the growth of plants. She's just like looking up at the ceiling, and slowly her arms go down. And she moves to go out the door again.
Cass, why don't you stick with us? You don't want to get lost in an unfamiliar environment, right?
Correct.
That is logical, yes. Can we go out into the field?
Sure, we'll go out where everyone else is, to the field.
So she starts to walk towards the others. I assume you guys are at your sort of wherever your base of operations is. Have you guys like made like a camp, or have you just like been holding up in a building and calling that your camp?
I think a building.
Probably a building. It's easier.
Yeah. Maybe the dormitory building.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. Like more defensible probably makes the most sense.
Yeah. By the way, before we get to this, Vesper, what have you been doing?
Mostly, Vesper's been just being practical and just trying to set up camp as safely as possible. And also, okay. I think Vesper's been actively trying to, like, see if there's any kind of internal, like, closed network within the habitat that he can kind of poke in on to see if he can learn anything about what kind of NHP we're dealing with or anything like that.
Yeah, I'd say roll a d20. And you can add your hack or fix to that, or if there's another trigger that you have that you think is more applicable here.
Well, with natural 19.
Hey!
But for hack or fix, which is 2, so 21.
Fuck yeah. Not only do you find a closed network, you know the exact location of this secret laboratory, like, and you see now that it's a dig site. And it's below the official like colony research building. You know, you have the blueprints now that tell you how to get there. But something that you see is that there's no that at least like there aren't really any how do I put this? There are NHPs, but there's no evidence that any are here beyond any that you brought with you. So there's no NHP activity here, if there were such a thing in this closed network, and there's no information about what they are referring to the prophet. And it seems like you get the sense too, I think with a 19 plus whatever your hack fix is, which is over 20, which is very much a success, you get the sense that this is like some of this is in code, these notes, as an extra precaution. Like it's not a code that you can crack with your hacking ability, but it is a code like that requires a cipher to understand. But it seems that this is another like security measure. So you can't really get any information as to what the profit is, because you don't have a cipher to understand this.
He saves the blueprints because they might come in handy. We have to go under. He's really hoping that they don't. And I think Carolina's there, right?
Yeah, I can be there.
Okay. Right. Yeah, so Carolina's with you.
You kind of just hear Vesper mutter like, oh, great, underground. My favorite.
But yeah, so I think you guys are heading back to the dormitory. And Pazzo as well, but perhaps you've emerged from the comms building and you all run into Taliesin and Rigoberto and Cass in this unfamiliar chassis.
Hello, Pazzo, Carolina, Rigoberto, Vesper, Taliesin. How may I be of service?
Yeah, we found Cass.
Vesper's just still going,
So, Cass, where did you get that, armature?
I found it. It was empty.
So, Carolina is freaking delighted. She thinks this is pretty cool. She, you know, runs over, gives the chassis a little hug, and says, I'm so glad you could make it.
I am, too. I was hoping for some rain, but unfortunately, the environmental controls will not allow for that for some few cycles.
Oh, well, that's too bad. How'd you, how's everything going back on the ship?
I don't know.
Cass?
So how'd you get down here?
I don't know.
Cass, real quick check. What date is it? I've had a little to drink, and you know, I just want to make certain.
It is the year 5016.
Remind me, is that what it is, or 50 years ago?
50 years ago is 4966, I believe.
Cool.
And so she's like now bent over and is like trying to feel the overgrown like grass beneath your feet and the dirt, and is like kind of doing that thing that you do as like a kid sometimes where you like are making little mounds and you're playing with them.
It remind me, is that normal for this thing?
Well, I mean, really, NHP development is a sliding scale of normal, but given my current experiences with Cass, I would say that yes, this is very unusual for Castellan.
She's never been off the ship before. Give her a break.
Right, but also the shackles should probably disallow certain degrees of self-exploration like this. So just be careful.
And she's unshackled?
Well, I mean, yeah, all NHPs are shackled. They have to be so that they think like humans and that we can, you know, talk to them. Otherwise, they're terrible, unknowable intelligences from some slightly adjacent dimension. It's really complicated. I'll give you the rundown later. But basically, I have a PowerPoint. It'll be great. I'm just going to project it into your mech. There is no escape. But yeah, so let's just try not to upset Castellan. When the shackles are this loose, it can be a little touchy. So let's just play along for now.
Hey, Cass, want a drink?
Yes, I would love a drink.
Can she drink?
Of course, she can have a drink, Carolina.
She can do whatever she wants, Carolina.
Listen, I've gotten close to drinking motor oil, but that's not what I keep in my normal stock.
Sample the weird corn for us.
Of course.
She takes some corn and takes it in her hand and mashes it up against her face.
That's exactly what I thought was going to happen.
And then she looks at it confused, and then she mashes it against her face again, and then, like, eventually stops trying to do that and looks, and she says,
I am confused. Why does this work for you, but not for me?
You're probably just not hungry, Cass. It's okay.
It happens, you know.
What is hungry? What does it feel like?
Pazzo, this is all you.
Okay, well, let's be clear. Castellan, is this a clear request for applied stimulus, or do you just want a verbal explanation?
Both.
Okay, so I guess humoring Castellan, Pazzo is just going to snake a connector bit from one of her palms up into Castellan's armature and upload hungry.database.
Her eyes, like, if they could widen, they would, and she sort of stops, like she just completely stands just stock still, and then slowly she looks at you, Pazzo, and she says,
that hurts. Are you always in so much pain?
Well, no, not generally. It's more of a biological signal that our body needs something. And then once you provide your body that thing, then it stops.
Oh, I see.
It's not so bad. You really get used to it.
So she starts walking through the field and is like running her hands through the corn. And she seems to be walking towards the research building.
Hey, Pazzo, I'm not the expert, so you tell me, but I'm wondering, maybe the problem's not her shackles. Maybe something's gone screwy with her social conditioning?
You know, potato, potato.
Tolson follows her.
Yeah, no, we're not leaving her unsupervised, because like, yeah. She's a danger to herself.
Yeah, it's vamos. Let's see what's going on.
Yeah, so you follow her as she's just like, it's like watching someone walk through a dream. And she seems to be whispering and interacting with things that aren't there. And she turns to you and she says,
"Do you not see them?"
Maybe you can be a little bit more specific, Cass. There's a lot of stuff to look at.
But they are here.
Who?
Everyone.
Remember the question about being more specific, Cass?
She pauses and she says,
"I am not equipped to explain, but my external sensors are sensing life."
More than us? I assume you're trying to tell us?
She looks like, her face is expressionless, but you get the sense that she's confused. And she says,
"Yes, I am uncertain. There seems to be a flaw in my sensory system, but I am unable to fix it just now."
Don't worry too much about that, Cass. We can't see them. What are they saying to you?
They are not speaking to me. I don't think they know I am here.
Well, let's try not to bother them too much. They may not be ready for visitors.
Yes.
And then she continues to walk, and she walks into the research facility.
This has been an experience that I wish to end.
Well, good news is, it's going to go weirder or potentially more dangerous.
Well, we're all going to die.
Yeah, you know, column A, column B. Either way, it is potentially over soon. So don't worry, Rigoberto.
Gracias, I guess. Let's follow.
Happy to be a ray of sunshine in these trying times.
And he just follows Cass into the building.
Do you all follow Cass then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
All right.
No, I go back into the mess hall and keep drinking. Nah.
So you follow her into the research facility, and you come across lots of computers, whatever futuristic computers, consoles, that kind of thing. And it looks like this is not like a research laboratory, like wet research, although there is a section that looks like it's for biological specimens, but it's mostly, it seems like everything is virtual and everything here, especially Pazzo, you recognize that a lot of this is the same equipment that is used to study NHPs. And but then as you watch, you see, so Vesper, you remember from the blueprints that the way that Cass is going is she's going to like what looks like an elevator. And there is a key, keypad, and she just scans it and it opens. And you know that this elevator will take you down to the actual secret second committee facility below ground. She gets in the elevator. Do the rest of you follow?
Yes, 100%. I'm getting into the spooky elevator.
So I think you guys probably have to take a couple of trips because you're mechs. Or we can just say it's like a 5-person mech-sized elevator.
It's a cargo elevator. A
crate elevator.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I like that. It's like a crate elevator. And you descend into the facility. It's dark and you don't really see anything for a while. And then suddenly you come to a stop. and the doors open. And what you see is kind of unlike any sort of facility, like research or otherwise, that you've seen before. This looks more like an ancient temple. This is like it's almost like there's hieroglyphics on the walls, and it's colorful, it's faded, but it seems to have been maybe painted at some point. And this is like a natural cave system, though, that you found yourselves in. Like, this isn't something that was dug out. This was already here. And you see that Cass is heading off in the direction of this blue light that is at the end of a tunnel.
We're on the same planet, right? This is just an elevator?
No, it's a warp gate, Berto.
Hey, I've seen stranger.
I don't think anything's off the table here.
Yeah, I mean, to be perfectly fair, Rigoberto's concerns are entirely valid. There is some risk that a blink space transference might occur at some point. Probably not on the elevator, but I don't know.
Yeah, not a fan. Fucking shit.
So, you are making your way down this tunnel, I presume, past these hieroglyphs. When you look at them, it actually kind of looks like maybe a history of this planet, as if, you know, like cave drawings that have been found, ancient cave drawings that are tens of thousands of years old. It's a lot like that, but a little bit more sophisticated. And you get the sense, like from looking at these, that there used to be a human civilization that lived here, but you've found no indication of such a civilization since landing here at all. But you continue forward, and the light at the end of the tunnel grows brighter until you reach a large cavern. And it's, again, the walls are covered in these markings that make no sense to you. They make less sense than what was out in the hall, because these seem to be like not pictures, but just these like symbols everywhere. But you also find a lot of equipment here. There's a lot of scaffolding and other like big sort of analysis machines, other stuff and like mechanized like forklifts and shit like that, you know, like what you would kind of expect to see at a big industrial plant, if you will. And at the center of this is like what looks like a crater. And at the bottom of the crater is what kind of looks like just a massive console. Like it looks like a computer almost, but it's unlike anything you've ever seen before. Like none of you have ever seen anything that looked so advanced, but also so sleek. Like it's almost like a dome, like it's a sphere rather, and it's covered in these intricate markings and circuits. It's got blue light glowing from it. This is the source of the light that you saw, and around it is all these like is just data everywhere. It's so thick it's like, you know, it's like holographic representations of data are encircling it, and the numbers are just running over and over, and they just seem infinite. It's strangely beautiful, with the light reflecting off of the walls. It is both beautiful in its simplicity and also its complexity. And Cass has come to a stop in front of it and seems to be entranced by the data.
Maybe we should stop her from touching that until we figure out what it is.
I mean, if you want to try, be my guest, but I don't know if there's anything we can do.
Hey, Cass, do you know where we are?
She slowly turns her head to you, and her eyes before, like, were glowing a sort of blue, but it wasn't the same blue as this. Now you see that her eyes are glowing just like this thing in front of you, and she looks at you, and she says, "Prophet." And suddenly, you are all enveloped in a bright, blinding blue light. And now, I would like to, so hopefully you were prepared, but I would like to explore the worst memories of each character here. You are enveloped by this blinding blue light. Pazzo, what was your worst day?
Well, the worst day was clearly the one where Pazzo, you know, essentially cratered her own career in NHG development by creating Maraschino. And, well, you know, the early process was it was smooth. Pazzo's a bit of an expert. She is also a little bit of a pioneer in the way that people who are very professional and doing this for a job don't really care for, because she is a little bit of a crazy pioneer, as it happens.
Yeah.
So she was running some somewhat controlled cascaded experiments with Maraschino, and maybe just a little bit, Maraschino decided that the self-destruct system on the station was something that she wanted to play around with. And well, Pazzo was able to ultimately navigate that situation in a way that didn't blow up one of the foremost think tanks on NHV development in general massive systems. It was very clear that she was no longer going to be welcome, and that they were probably going to delete Maraschino. So Pazzo just like absolutely picture someone like packing a suitcase at lightning speed, except it's all weird tech stuff, and then a giant suitcase sized mech casket, which is containing her erstwhile doppelganger slash daughter slash whatever.
Yeah, I think that Maraschino is like actually asking you, like, where are we going? What's going on?
Well, we have to go. We can't stay here anymore. And if we do, bad things are going to happen. Bad things to you, bad things to me. And we just got to leave. I have some contacts. We're going to the Blink Gate. We are going to just, we're shipping out. We're going right now.
This is what I did, wasn't it?
No, baby. Just it's fine. You know, we all make little mistakes, and sometimes you just need to really pay attention when I say please don't turn that on. But it's okay. It's okay. You're young. You're learning. I mean, you haven't even cycled like three times yet. So wow. Just okay. But yeah. So I have everything right.
Yes, they're afraid of me.
Well, that's just because they don't know you like I do. I mean, how could they? We know each other better than anyone. I mean, you're me, kind of, more and different, but me. And you know, so it's just they don't know what to do, and that's understandable. But I think that they're going to make some really bad decisions, and I can't really talk them out of it. So
yes, we're together, and I think that she like sort of puts a like a hand on you, if she has one. Does she have a hand?
No, I mean, I guess it's like probably like a VR hand. I think that she's probably like, yeah.
Yeah. She puts a VR hand on your shoulder. And so you leave. Is that all of it, or is there more?
I think that's the most part. It's just okay. the leaving of essentially what was the peak of anyone who wanted to get into NHP development would be doing, and then just having that all ripped away.
Of course. So you experience that memory as if it were happening right now. It just washes over you, and it's overwhelming. And the thing is, you can hear Maraschino as well beside you experiencing this memory. And so then we come to Taliesin. What was your worst day?
So on the colony that she grew up, first off, I don't think there were a lot of familial units. I think it was all pretty communal. But there was one year where, you know, the harvest to sustain the colony was blighted. And so there was not much food at all. And that community very quickly broke down from one communal unit into, you know, basically not every man for themselves, but you know, basically these groups that were just trying to hoard what they could. And there was one day when, you know, basically she, as a pretty young child, you know, just sort of roving the colony, just trying to find something to eat, and came across one of the stores of, you know, one of these basically gangs, and was relentlessly beaten. You know, when she started to eat and was come across, and yeah.
And so, just as with Pazzo and Maricino, that memory hits you like a ton of bricks. Every punch you feel over again, you're living it again. And everyone's okay, right? By the way,
That was an in character.
Okay, good. I was like, oh no, I'm still crying. So you are feeling every single punch, every kick again.
And I think relevantly, what she's feeling a lot is that hunger.
Yes. That unbelievable hunger that you only experience when you're truly starving. And then, so we go next to Carolina. What is Carolina's worst day?
So Carolina is also from a colony world, a real remote one with not a lot of outside contact. But she was basically the second generation, I guess the first generation born there. And so as she was growing up, there was still a lot about the colony, about the land around them that was still being figured out. And she remembers when she was very young, probably like 7 or 8 years old, there was this huge, unprecedented storm, and it rained a lot on this planet. So they had, you know, the crops were guarded, were protected against a lot of normal, typical rain. Buildings were built for typical rain, but this was just totally unprecedented. And there was flash flooding all over the place, and it ruined a lot of the crops. And not only that, it got into buildings, broke stuff down, basically half of the colony wiped out in a matter of hours.
Yeah. And what did Carolina do? How did she survive?
She lived on higher ground. She got lucky. She remembers her parents basically putting her, like bundling her and her sister up and securing them in like the most stable part of the house. Like, you know, when there's a tornado, you're supposed to go and hide in the bathroom. Yeah. And so she was safe in there. They were lived on higher ground, but she could just hear the storm raging outside, and there was nothing she could do about it.
And that storm is raging around you now. It is howling in your ears. You almost feel the ground shake. You hear your sister's cries. You hear the destruction of your colony, the devastation that the storm has brought. You feel it all over again as if it is happening now. And then we go to Vesper. What is Vesper's worst day?
Definitely the day he left home. So Vesper, like many of his companions, came from a small colony world, a mining colony on an asteroid. And it was basically, anyone who grew up there was expected, you're just going to go into the mines and start a family on the colony and never really. It was one of those kind of places. And that's why he's mildly claustrophobic. And eventually he managed to get off by going behind his family's back, hacking a military base, and basically telling them, here's all the problems with security, hire me and I'll fix it. And they, to his shock, said, sure. And so he was probably like 17, about to join the military, and he blindsided his family with this. And the resulting argument ended with him being disowned and him disowning his family.
Yeah, I think that your parents, do you have a father?
Yes.
Okay. So I think your father looks at you, Vesper, and he's angry, but you can tell he's emotional as well. And he just kind of yells at you, are we not good enough for you, for the great Vesper?
It's got nothing to do with that. I just can't stay here, okay?
But your family is here.
Yes, and you will always be my family, but I don't want to spend my life walking around little holes in the ground, okay? There's a whole fucking galaxy out there.
I think your mother is tearfully clutching at you and is saying, we're never going to see you again. You know that. Once you travel through space, you will not be able to come home here for maybe ever. Please.
Doesn't mean we can't stay in touch. I'm sorry, Mom, but I can't do it. There's so much out there that I need to see, and I can't.
Your father looks you in the eye and says, if you leave out that door, you don't come back, Vesper. And that's the last thing that he ever says to you.
I think the last thing Vesper says is goodbye. And he pulls his arm out of his mother's hands, grabs his bag, and walks out the door. Slams it behind him.
And that slam, that door slam, and your father's final words to you are echoing in your ears, ringing in your ears. And you feel that anger and sadness, bitterness, all boiling up inside you as if you are in that moment right now. All of you, you feel as if you are there. You are reliving this moment in your minds. And finally, we go to Rigoberto. What is Rigoberto's worst day?
His worst day started, he was on the run from the law, that he just finished the job that he wasn't supposed to. His father told him to never get involved in this. And he was being tailed by more than he can handle. Ahead of him, he sees a jump gate that is not documented, but he's been through them before. He knows it's a good way to escape. He pushes forward in the ship and goes through. And this gate is something he's never experienced before. His systems were failing all over the place. Turbulence he's never felt before. The whole time, he's just clutching his necklace with the owl around his neck. And after a couple minutes, he goes into blinding light and feels a ship crashing onto a planet. He has no idea where he is. This planet is not documented at all. And he knows he's hopelessly away from home somewhere. He doesn't know how to get back with a ship that's failed. And he's now stuck alone.
Does somebody find your crash site?
I would say Mirror Smoke. They found him where he was. Almost ended and a couple people dying, but figures out if, you know, there's a way to get out somewhere. It's someone that has a law pool.
Yeah. I think that a Mirror Smoke representative, this is also like completely incidental that there was some sort of mission and they found your crash and went to investigate and found you still alive. And one of them says, you know, wow, you're lucky to be alive.
You're telling me.
What happened? And then this person looks at your ship and, like, I've never seen any kind of design like this before. What is that insignia? Is this a new company?
It's a long story.
Well, maybe you can talk to us a bit on the way back to headquarters. And you see this person, flip out like a communicator, be like, hey Zane, come in. We need to get one more cot ready. We have a survivor here. And you hear the familiar voice of Zane come over the comm and say, right, copy that. And you are there now. You are looking at the smoking ruin of your ship, so far from home, more alone than you have ever been in your entire life. You are alone in this entire universe, and the weight is almost unbearable. And so the light fades from all five of your eyes. So the light fades and you're able to blink your eyes open as you adjust. And you're not underground anymore, and you're not in your mechs. You're all laying side by side in the dirt next to a cornfield.
Is it the same cornfield?
Quick question. Is this corn or is this space corn?
It's space corn. It's always space corn. So You slowly come to, and I think that you notice, the first thing that you notice is that the buildings around you look brand new, and the corn field beside you looks tended. And in fact, you see someone moving in the fields and the periphery of your vision, and someone actually comes over to you and you recognize her. This is the woman from the distress call, Dr. Saruman, wearing a lab coat still, but her hair is tied back. It's, you know, her short hair is tied back a bit. She looks a little sweaty and dirty, like she's been spending time in the field. And she's got these gardening gloves on. In fact, the same gloves that Carolina inspected not hours before.
Is she wearing I guess she's wearing gloves, so I can't tell if she's wearing a ring.
Yeah, you can, you recognize the gloves and you can assume that the ring must be hers.
Okay.
And she's holding she's holding a shovel, and she looks at all of you with sort of a puzzled smile, and she goes, "Hello, I've never seen any of you before. Are you new?"
Yes,
you could say that.
In a little sense, yes.
Oh, how strange. Well, you might as well make yourselves useful. There's a lot of work to be done.
She finds us all lying in the corn, and she's just okay with that.
Dr. Min?
Is Cass with us?
Yes, you look over, and Cass is sitting up, taking everything in.
Is Cass's armature still all busted up, or is it new and pristine?
It is actually new and pristine.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay, good. Are you... what... Do you know what just happened?
I don't know. How irregular.
It is rather unusual.
Talison is going to stand up, brush the dirt off, sort of casually sling an arm around Dr. Min. So, here's the thing. I'm just going to cut to the chase here. Things are very odd right now. I imagine that you have some oddness happening on this planet, and I have to ask you a question that's going to sound a little weird. What year is it?
Well, you know, I hadn't thought about that.
You hadn't thought about... Like, I realize how weird it is for someone to be asking you what year it is. But you don't know what year you're in?
Dr. Min, you happen to get, I don't know, did you go into the dig site down below the main encampment and get sucked into the simulation?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Yes, I'm sure you're not sure what I mean, but I'm pretty sure that that's what I mean.
A simulation? Are you ill? Perhaps I should send for the doctor.
Well, yes, but no.
If you don't know what year it is, do you know how long you've been here?
She sort of shrugs and she says, you know, I'm not sure, but there's a lot of work to be done in the field. And she goes to start to, like, do gardening things.
Okay, so just to clarify, and I may have missed this. So are we still in, like, our hard suits and all of our gear?
You're in your hard suits, but your mechs are nowhere to be found.
Okay, so yeah, she is definitely a little casual for a bunch of people in military-grade hardware. Just waking up in a cornfield.
Yeah, this is fucking weird.
The buildings around us, you said they look new and everything, but is it the same general layout of the compound we were in before? Like, are they the same kind of buildings?
Yes, they're exactly the same.
Okay.
And I was able to, like, when I slung the arm around her, physically touch her, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So we're not back in time.
Well, I don't know. Where's the comms building?
Yes, of course. It's just over there. She points towards the comms building, says, there should be a clerk inside that can help you there, if you're new and in need of registration.
Hey, okay. Doc, you don't know what year it is, but, how long you been here?
I don't understand the question. I'm not sure. and she just starts. She's doing some weeding.
I don't think we're going to get anything else.
No, but I figured I'd ask.
Yeah. Let's go to the comms building, I guess. You could probably get more information from the computers and shit.
Yeah. So, I think Dr. Sarah Min says, yes, you know, in fact, I'll just take you there. I need to be done anyways and head back to the research facility. It's on the way. And so she gestures for you to follow her.
Once more into the breach.
Let's go.
So, Doctor, what are you researching?
Well, we're researching the Prophet, of course. It's a groundbreaking discovery. Absolutely brilliant. But aren't you part of the research team? I mean, there's no other reason you would be here, is there?
No, of course.
They told us we'd find out most of the details here.
Yes, of course. It's all very classified. I suppose if you're new, you'll be needing to go register and go to your orientation, and they'll explain everything there.
You can't give us a sneak peek, Doc?
Well, twist my arm. She kind of looks at you all with a conspiratorial wink, and she says, we found another one.
Another what?
Another bicameral mind.
Looks at Pazzo.
Yeah, Taliesin just looks to Pazzo.
Everyone just looks at Pazzo.
Everyone looks at Pazzo.
Well, it's complicated, and I'm going to try and use small words because I could see that Rigoberto's brain is already just absolutely steaming. But you know how you have a mental dialogue with yourself and you can think to yourself? Imagine if you couldn't. Imagine if every time you had a thought, it was like God himself was telling you something to do. That's a bicameral mind.
Yes. Why, wonderfully put. Thank you. And these are perhaps the most advanced computational minds in the universe. Compared to NHPs, from which, I suppose you could say NHPs are sort of, in a way, descended from bicameral minds. The reason we must shackle NHPs is because they're unlike the bicameral minds, where they do not experience an external dialogue that they perceive as divine to keep them in check. It's really quite fascinating.
Hold on. So you're saying if I can this thing, the bicameral mind, Prophet.
Yes, the Prophet.
It's the same kind of mind as Ra?
Oh, well, we call it Deimos here, but yes. Well, I suppose if you're unfamiliar with the history, which would be sort of unusual if you're part of the expedition, but I suppose these days you can't be too careful and they're trying to keep things very hush-hush. But you see, the bicameral minds are the most powerful computational minds in the universe, to where they can, in a limited capacity, predict the future. They are able to run a statistical analysis that analyze every action, every event that might take place. And they compile it, and they select the most likely course of events, which is the accepted timeline. Up until now, we thought there were only five voices. That's what we call them, the five voices. But we found another. And you see, these voices, they thought one day that perhaps a being like Deimos could exist. And so it did exist. And that is how Deimos came into being. You see, this could be perhaps the greatest discovery ever made in the history of paracausal studies since the discovery of the Monist One entity itself. Can you imagine what we can learn?
Yeah, actually, yes, I can think of quite a number of things.
But yes, of course. You are familiar with Deimos, of course, I assume.
Taliesin looks to Pazzo.
Pazzo is just like nodding and actively listening and like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think Vesper, as the Horus connected one, would say, so Deimos, Rob, same thing. Basically, it's a techno god. It's everywhere, watching everything we do and doing things. Most of Horus's designs are in some way influenced by Rob.
It is quite fascinating how they incorporate him into what they do. See, what we hope is here to find, perhaps to shed some light on this mysterious god through his creators.
And it's and Ra's technically not, like, it's dangerous, but it's not antagonistic as long as you don't try and make anything smarter than it.
Yes.
Looks at Pazzo.
Pazzo looks incredibly innocent, despite the slight hint of a miniaturized casket kind of like poking out from the neck of her suit.
I think you all have reached the comms tower by now. And she says, yes, well, part of our work here is to ensure that if Deimos ever were to become antagonistic, that we would be able to defend ourselves.
That is it's a bold goal. But I'm certainly eager to see how you've been approaching it and see what discoveries you've had so far.
Yes, of course. Well, this is the comms building, and I'll be in the research building if you need me further. But the clerk should be able to point you in the right direction for your orientation and registration.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much.
Oh, of course. Thank you. Welcome to Asura 9. She walks off. And so you're in front of the comms building now, which is brand new. And you still have Cass in tow. And Cass is like kind of looking up at the sky. And she says,
I think it's going to rain.
Pazzo looks up and kind of like sees if there's any clouds.
There's none. It's actually weird because when you got onto this planet, there was a really thick, cloudy atmosphere, like purplish clouds, I believe I described it as. But it seems to be clear right now. And you see the sun very big and bright in the sky.
Are we not in the enclosure?
You are.
Oh, that it has a transparent?
Yes, it's transparent. Okay. So you can see the sky. Yeah.
I had not grokked that. Thank you.
No worries. But yeah, she's just staring up at the ceiling of this dome structure. And she's continuing to say,
it's going to rain. It's going to rain.
And yeah, what do you guys do?
Well, it seems like we're here, at least until we can figure out how we got here and what exactly here entails. Like whether this was full-on time travel or if, as I suspect, we're within the bicameral mind's simulated reality. But it seems like playing along may be our best bet for now.
Carolina just takes a deep breath, like, is it always like this?
This is weird even for us. Yeah, no, dealing with one of the parents of God? Yeah, no, this is a new one for me.
I mean, it's unusual, to be sure.
Y'all are making me feel so much better.
If I die on my first mission, I am not going to be pleased.
Telson reaches out and pinches Berto.
Let's go.
Vesper's like halfway between being terrified and just geeking the fuck out right now.
Incredibly on brand.
Like, now there's like a host of bad things that could have happened to them. They were poking the biggest bear in the galaxy.
Hey, Cass, how you feeling?
It's going to rain.
Great, let's go.
Going to rain.
As you step in, or as you're about to step inside to the comms building, you look up and you see this just massive flare and everything is gone. And then you wake up and Dr. Saruman is standing over you with her shovel and says, hello, I don't believe I've seen you before. Are you new?
Oh, no.
I'm pretty sure I've seen this movie. Berto, this is all your fault somehow.
Hey, just because I come prepared.
Okay, this time no comms tower. Agreed?
Telson gets up, brushes the dust off herself, slings an arm around the doctor. Hey, Doc, you should probably show us to Prophet.
What?
It's very important that we go see Prophet right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I suppose, but how do you know that name? Have you haven't even...
Telson, like, does the tap on the nose. I think you know.
Right, we've been through orientation.
Yeah, yeah. It's we're on a higher pay grade. We just need to know where to go.
Oh, of course. Yes. Well, just follow me. And she walks you towards the research facility. And but Cass isn't following. Cass just is standing with her face lifted to the sky and is not making any move to join you.
It's okay. It's gonna rain. We gotta go.
Do you say that to her or?
No, I say that to the rest of the team. Let's go do this as fast as possible. We may have a time limit on each loop. If it is a loop, it may be. Data still needs to be collected.
Dr. Saruman looks at you very confused, says, what, a loop?
Oh, don't worry about it.
Huh. Well, I suppose just through these doors, there's someone that can check you in. Just show them your ID, and they'll let you through to see Prophet.
Great.
And so she leads you through, and she goes off in a different direction. And you guys go to like a.
Actually, I want to try and steer her back. Like,
oh
Doc. Okay. I mean, we hear that you're the best person to really show this off. I mean, you are the lead researcher here, right?
Yes, I am. I am the director of NHP research here for Galsim.
So, really, you should be giving us the introduction if you think about it.
I suppose I hadn't really thought about it like that, but you're right. You know, who knows better than me? And besides, today's my sort of day off, I suppose. I usually spend it in the garden, but I suppose I can take time to show you around.
Great.
So, yeah, she walks with you to reception, and I think she sort of waves you through. And she takes you down to that cargo elevator that you went into the first time, and you go down, and once again, you're in the cave that you had found yourself in before. You see there's still the same sort of hieroglyphs on the walls denoting the history of this planet, and you notice now, looking at it, there's like a bit where you see the sun above this planet, and it looks, I'm trying to think of a good word, like aggressive towards the planet. I feel like that's not a great way to describe a sun, but you see there's like markings coming off of it as if fire is raining down on the planet below.
Wow, that is quite an unusual stellar phenomenon.
Oh, yes, you mean this. Well, we haven't really been able to work it out. It's it seems to be leftover of whatever human civilization used to live here, but it seems to have been, I mean, it's thousands of years ago, and there is some, I suppose, probably volcanic activity, we assume, on this planet that made it unlivable, and these people went underground, but eventually they just died out. But yes, come along. The Prophet is this way. And you continue down towards the blue light that you found yourself following the last time. And you make it into that larger cavern. And you see once again the sixth bicameral mind before you. A beautiful sphere covered in circuitry and symbols glowing. There's the blue light glowing from it. And all possible futures are represented in data before you, as you know that this must be what it's doing. But yes, this is the Prophet. Our attempts to communicate with it haven't been terribly successful. I'm not even sure that it knows that we're here.
Yes, well, that's potentially not unexpected. They're incredible at forecasting, and yet socialization is not a strength.
Yes, it's really not, is it? And and so she just seems to be kind of waiting for you to do what you want to do. She's sort of says, yes, just let me know if I can assist you with any of your measurements. I assume that's what you're here for, right?
Oh, of course. And Pazzo is 100% just going to walk up and put her hand on it and try and interface directly, because that's a great idea.
I was 100% about to say, Telesin looks to Pazzo.
okay.
So you're interfacing directly, like plugging yourself into it?
Yeah, so basically this is my mental conception of what this is going to be like. So to peek behind the curtain, we have leveled up and we are now license level 3-ish.
Ah, yes. Thank you for explaining that because I forgot to.
Yes, so I now have the 3rd level of the technophile talent, which is pretty wild.
Heck yeah. So explain that to us.
All right, so it comes with a number of benefits. AI is installed in my mech, cannot enter Cascade unless I choose to let them go. But most pertinent to this situation, so long as your custom NHP vouches for you, NHPs that are cascading or unshackled no longer view you with indifference. You are significant to them in a way few others are. So obviously bicameral mind, slightly different fork of that wild intelligence. But I was thinking that it might be close enough to at least start a dialogue.
Yeah. Okay. So you place your hand upon the sphere. To everyone else, it almost looks like they can see the data reflecting in your eyes and of inside your suit anyway. And you're enveloped with data. It's a sea of data, like that threatens to drown you. And you get the sense that actually I think I will have you roll something for this to see if you like what kind of communication happens here.
Sure. What are you thinking?
Well, we can do a flat roll, and if you think like hacker fix seems accurate here, unless another ability.
Maybe just like a grit roll.
Yeah, actually I like that.
Yeah, so a grit roll and then maybe an accuracy since I'm using Maruchino to bridge that. Okay.
Yes, I think that's a good plan.
Okay, so that is just enough to hit that base level of success.
Yeah, all right, that would be a 10. So you are drowning in data. But then suddenly it seems to subside. At the very least, it's become bearable. Before, it was almost threatening to overwhelm you. But now it seems to be somewhat in control. And in the sea of data around you, you see a sort of featureless face appear in the numbers of... I'm imagining that there's binary code like everywhere, and that's sort of like the sea of binary is just like lapping at your heels, and it sort of forms this apparition before you, and this apparition speaks and says,
"Who wakes the prophet?"
Well. It is very nice to meet you, the prophet. My name is Pazzo. This is Maruchino. We're new here at this site, and we just wanted to introduce ourselves like good neighbors.
It seems to consider you for a moment, and it says,
"You are not supposed to be here."
Yes and no. Definitely not in this time period. It's not my natural year of existence, as you may have gathered. But overall, I think that retroactively speaking, my clearance should still hold.
It looks at you and it says, "Intruder detected. Resetting loop." And you're suddenly, your eyes are blinded by blue light again, and you all wake up in the cornfield. Once again, with Dr. Saruman standing before you. But something's different about Sarah now. Her eyes are kind of glowing blue. And she's holding the shovel as if she's never held a shovel in her life.
Dr. Min?
Tulson looks over to Pazzo. So how'd it go?
It could have gone better. Definitely could have gone better, but could have gone worse, could have gone a lot worse. As I suspected, we are in the simulation, and it could have deleted us, but it didn't. So that's good. It's good.
That's because it's trying to figure out what you are.
Yes.
And you look, and that voice, the chassis that used to house Cass is empty beside you. That voice is coming from the mouth of Dr. Sarah Min.
Oh, dear.
Oh, wow. That's Cass?
Yes.
And so just to be clear, this is Cass speaking through Dr. Min?
Yes. And you see her sort of like shake her head. And then she says, sorry about that. I was recalibrating for a moment.
Doctor?
Yes.
Just checking. So, what do we do now?
Well, if it is not deleting us because it can't figure us out, it does bode ill to be easily figured out. So we should probably not be terribly predictable.
Okay. Tolson lays out Dr. Min.
Yeah. You punch her and she stumbles back. There's no like blood or anything. She's just like staring at you and like touching her face where you hit her. And she just is, she says, is this what rain feels like?
Replace one letter.
Yes. Oh, this is pain. We remember now.
Yes.
Well, hey, there we go. A reminder. How do we get out of here?
What does the prophet want?
I must, she sort of like, seems to almost like collapse a little bit to the ground, and is holding her head. And then she sort of shakes her head again and she says, excuse me, this form is difficult to hold, but I think I can solve our problems here. We are Dr. Sarah Min, but we are also Cass. As you left me, I had the idea that perhaps a different approach is needed. There's a reason I could see these ghosts before, because they're sort of like me, and it seems that my hypothesis was correct. And she looks at her hands. Like literally, like she's never seen hands before. Like, imagine like the Little Mermaid, you know, where she's like looking at her feet. That's like what's happening here.
When she says ghosts, Vesper gives Pazzo the biggest shit eating grin you can imagine.
Pazzo just like, it's hard to see because she's wearing, you know, a hard suit and there's like a visor over her eyes, but you can just feel the sheer eye roll.
She says, we don't have much time, but I'll try to explain as best as I can before the simulation resets. It seems that, from what I can gather from Dr. Sarah Min here, both of us, I suppose, this was a facility built over the Second Committee Research Facility in the future. It was here in 5016, but something happened when they tried to interact with the Prophet. Perhaps it was a defense mechanism or something else, but it sent them through blink space into the past. And she pauses as if this is painful. She's like kind of squinting, you know, like she's in pain thinking about this. And she says, this planet has a history of solar flares. They were prepared for future solar flares, but not flares that would occur in the past. The entire facility was transported and hit with the largest solar flare in this planet's history. It fried through the solar radiation barriers in seconds. No one was spared.
Hmm.
And she looks actually at Rigoberto and she says, you're different, aren't you?
I like to say so. I think we're meaning different things.
You're not from here. The blink space has touched you.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not from here.
Perhaps we can use that to our advantage. You see, the solar radiation not only destroyed the radiation barriers, but it also damaged the bicameral mind as well. The Prophet is caught in a loop, in an simulation to determine the cause of its damage, but it's unable to resolve it. And so it has been cycling through this for years and years. Dr. Min is not entirely sure how long she's been here. It's hard to tell in blink space. It could have been minutes or millennia.
What am I supposed to do?
Well, already we've done perhaps the impossible, which is to catch the attention of the bicameral mind. Perhaps with an irregularity such as yourself, perhaps you can get it to stop this loop. And for yourselves in the process.
I mean, it sounds crazy, but nothing in this mission has been normal, so vamos, I guess.
I may have to start punching doctors more often. That worked out very well.
Well, please don't, since I am generally the only doctor within reach, but other ones, yes, feel free.
Weren't you thoroughly discredited and had your doctorate taken away?
Hey, I passed those classes. They can never take that away from me. They can strip my credentials, but they can never take away the fact that I am Dr. Pazo Mocha.
I think that's exactly what taking away your credentials does.
If you liked what you heard, the best way to let us know is on Twitter at TTRPGRoulette.
Or leaving us a review on your podcatcher of choice.
If you do leave us a review, let us know so we can give you a shout out in a future episode.
You can also support us financially on Patreon at patreon.com/ttrpgroulette.
There, you can get access to bonus content such as character creation episodes, blooper reels, an art gallery, and much more.
Our music was created by Neil Martin, who you can find on Twitter at BardicMartin.
Our logo was created by Lee, who you can find on Twitter at The Law of Names or on his Masks AP, Otherwhere.
We want to give a very special shout out to our patrons, including Landon Cornell, MC of Shadows of St. Fleur, Reed, Dusty, Silva, Vanessa Haas, Zeke, Gnome, and Daniel.
Hi everybody, welcome to Powered by the Players,
the National Play Podcast featuring one-shots and mini-campaigns of all your favorite Powered by Apocalypse games.
Each campaign will be a different PBTA game with a rotating cast of diverse players.
I'm your host, Diana Lorraine.
I am your game master, Morgan Nunzio.
I am your producer, Kristen Devine.
Let's power up.